Sloss and Humphreys on the road.
Muggins and cream, cream and muggins, straight thuggin', living the dream.
And that's our intro.
Fucking muggles.
Tickling the clit inside your head that makes you laugh. They said it can't be done.
Are we in the same seats?
That's hack.
Oh, muggles.
Accidental rim job in the park.
Kiss, kiss, kiss.
Or am I just being cynical?
Just muggled it up on fucking Mugglepedia.
Where have you been since 9/11?
We have a very special guest on the podcast today, somebody who I have been picking up for the past 3 weeks. And normally whenever I pick someone up, I'd never have them on the podcast.
You've already been mentioned on this podcast?
Oh my God.
You got plugged?
Yeah.
You plugged me on your Instagram also. That was really helpful.
I'm glad. Did he tell you what was very funny about he was like, he'll give you a shout out on Instagram, like give you a hand, and then check your Instagram following and you had more than him. And he was like, I'll help the little guy. Yeah. Oh, can I have your help? can you help me, Arun?
Like, I came to say purely on the fact that I can't remember who recommended it to me, but it was someone from Soho in London was like, it's brilliant. And because we've had such good times in India and all the comedians we've met have been great, I'm like, I'm going to actually put my money where my mouth is and I'm going to go out and support like newer, younger comics and enjoy that. And I took my friend Breed, who is an agent, and we sat there. And like from like 10 minutes in, we were both like, oh my fucking God, like this is what the Fringe is about, something we've not seen before. And it's the Container's like a 80, 90 seater, is it?
It's 74.
74, yeah.
I think of the number every day. Yeah. How many tickets I've gone. So it's 74.
74, yeah. And I'm like, this will be, and it was sold out the day I was there. And then after the show, I'm like, I got to give her as much help because this is such a good show. And then me and Breed went outside and found out you have about 150 to 200,000 more Instagram followers than me. And I'm like, oh, fuck, yeah, I forgot.
It's India.
Yeah.
We are the most populated country in the world. So
you can have that many and still be a subculture.
Yes, yes, and I am.
Yeah.
I actually want to tell you guys that it's not respectable, my following back home.
No?
No, because also your shout out helped me the most because you know people here in Edinburgh.
Take that, Phoebe Waller-Bridge. Infinitely more successful, more talented than me. But you hear that? More fucking clout.
Just not on Instagram. That's what matters. No, but just, so that really helped me. That sent so many people to my show. And then they told me after the show that Daniel Sauce recommended you. And that's why we're here. So that has really helped. But my following is not very respectable in India. People have like 2-3 million at least. So,
really?
Yes, there's so many of us and all of us have like a fake account also, so you have to like factor
that. Oh, burners as well. Yeah. You got burner accounts.
Yes, we've got burner accounts.
So is that just where you can like be yourself without getting like the judgment, or is it just a private account for friends?
It's just a private account for friends. So I'm like, I count one person following me twice.
I see that on Facebook where somebody's got like, you had it actually, where you had your Daniel Sloss account, but then you had like Daniela Muggle Bloss and it was like a really cryptic...
Yeah.
First name. Is that just a privacy thing?
Well, yeah. So originally I did it on Facebook just because like when Netflix...
Shouldn't have told them it.
Oh, I'm not on Facebook. Feel free to follow Daniela Muggle Bloss. I've not been on it in 6 years. It was after Netflix came out and like started getting messages from everywhere. And I was like, I'll do one of those fake name accounts. And then like a month afterwards, and this is where I should be less judgmental, comedians... who didn't have Netflix specials and hadn't had anything change in their career in the past 3 months, started coming up with their own little fake names. And I'm like, oh, fuck off, man.
Cute. Real cute.
Like, is that just to just stop your gran seeing you post the word cunt?
If I ever did that, it would just be so people couldn't contact me saying, could you ask Daniel? Tell Daniel. I'd never read the rest of the message if it starts with tell Daniel.
I also found out through plugging your show, because I mentioned it at the end of the Playhouse shows, I was plugging all the shows I'd seen and the ones that I'd enjoyed, and somebody in the audience had filmed me shouting out your bit at the end, and I didn't realise this, because I drink a lot of whiskey on stage, and because I drink a lot of whiskey before I go on stage, by the end of the show, I'm drunk, but I'm still professional, so I'm plugging your show, I'm plugging Lou Walsh's show, I'm plugging Britannic, and then I say... And this is on camera. And whatever you do, don't go and see Jack Whitehall. No memory of saying that.
Why are you perpetuating the beef with Jack Whitehall? He's a nice lad.
He's a lovely guy.
Do you guys have beef?
No.
Yes.
Well.
He started it. He started the beef. And
on this very podcast here?
On his live show.
Oh.
And it got back to him. So Jack started the beef by being a joke thief.
Oh.
Jack done another comedian's bit of material on a TV show.
Oh, on a TV show?
On Jimmy Fallon.
And it was an open micer from where I'm from, Newcastle, had been doing this story and we'd seen it and it had been on the internet. So it was like 2011, there's receipts that in 2011 this open micer was doing the story.
And it wasn't like here's a similar thing that happened to me. It was a lifted joke and story.
There is also a theory that it wasn't the open mic as original thought and it was just a joke that's out there.
Yeah.
Oh.
That exists.
Like, you know.
Like a long form, like a really long form joke.
Like in India, like, are there just like, obviously there's comedy that's been there for about 25 years now, is that?
I mean, comedy has all been there as long as we've had the arts, but not stand-up comedy, not that like subsection.
What was it before it was stand-up? What sort of comedy?
I think we've had a lot of variety shows on TV, so there have been a lot of sketch characters. But we've had stand-up comedians. We've had Johnny Lever and Raju Srivastav. But their stand-up comedy was, they didn't have comedy clubs, they didn't gig, they didn't do spots and stuff. They just had auditorium shows for families. So it was just like clean comedy, family-friendly material.
And was it all original thoughts or was it all like from the book?
I think most of it was original because we also had a show called The Great Indian Laughter Challenge. And that also had a lot of, you know, I think it was how maybe comedy started in most countries where it was older men. And then they had like family material and then like just everyday observation.
For later, for the 9 p.m. show.
Yes.
Where the kids aren't allowed.
Because in the UK, there was like before comedy had its like rock and roll reinventing in like the 90s when it was alternative. The comedy before that was like straight white older men would go on and tell these sort of pub jokes.
Usually bigoted. Usually about your mother-in-law, like misogyny about your mother-in-law, but nothing original. It would all be like, you would see one old guy doing it in Portsmouth and then another old guy would be doing it in Bolton. There's different old guys, might have never met, but they're just playing the same material from the same stock.
And nobody cared that the jokes were stolen because it was sort of pre-TV, so the jokes never actually belonged to anyone. They were just jokes that you heard and told.
And acquired along the way.
And then the 90s happened and then we all agreed that you can no longer steal jokes anymore.
And that got called hack.
Yeah. So Jack did one of these sort of stories, told it as if it was his own.
It might have been an open mic, as it might have been old hack.
Oh.
And I would say on stage that I thought he was a joke thief and then it got back to him and it upset him, which is fair enough. And I didn't mean for it to upset him. And I thought somebody who was infinitely more richer than me and infinitely more successful would see me, younger, less successful comedian, be like, I don't give a fuck. But it upset him, so took out the show because I don't want to start any beef because all the times I've met Jack, he's been lovely. And then the other night, Cara, my wife, was going out to see some shows and Jack Whitehall walked into Abattoir and she was like, what would you have done if you were there? And I went, left through the back. There is no confrontation in me. I think my first thing was, she went, what would you do if you were there? And I went, would Kai be with me? She went, no. And I went, leave. I would leave.
I was there when he walked in.
Yeah?
I'm not going to feel awkward if somebody else stole a joke. That's his thing to feel awkward about. I'm not going to feel awkward about that. If I've said anything or if I haven't said anything, I'm not going to have your awkwardness. You've done the thing.
Aye.
That's true. Actually, have you never met him after?
I have. I've not met him since this thing. But we follow each other on social media. He sent me lovely messages whenever things have happened to me. I've, you know, done similar to him. I think the last time I met him, we were about 22, 23. He's a lovely fucking...
I think he's doing it on purpose. I think he's just trying to be like, look at me. I'm so nice. Yeah, I'm supporting you.
Yeah.
And then you're like feeling guilty every day.
So he's gaslighting me. He's like, well, I'm such a lovely guy. Next time he goes and nicks one of my gags, I'll be like, this mother, next time. He's not done it yet.
You know what you should do? You should put in a bit about how great he is.
Oh, kill him with kindness.
Yes.
I
I was actually thinking of it in a more psychotic manner.
Go on.
Yes, sure.
No, no, how would you do it then?
Yeah, he's talking like Mean Girls, like being really nice to each other's faces. And just like
that was what I was
top.
Suggesting. Right. You know, just something that takes away from the quality of your life because the beef intensifies and it reaches a level of madness that everybody's like, please stop, you're all rich. It's just... But frankly, when you're that rich, what else is there in life, right? Yeah. Like, it's just these things.
Man, when you get to a level of success where the only other people that you can have rivalry with are other straight white men.
Yes.
Yeah. Just sparring with other black belts.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, also, I feel this way also in India. I'm fairly privileged, quite privileged. And I'm just like, I don't really have any real problems anymore. I'm at the fringe.
Yeah, what am I going to make jokes about now?
What do I do?
I need some issues.
What do I?
So this is your first fringe?
Yes.
Is this your first time performing in the UK?
Yes, it is my first time.
How has the transition been, if any? Like, is it?
Yes, no, there has been a transition. The transition is fairly smooth, but I have to set a lot of context for some jokes. And of course, I had to change a lot of my Hindi punchlines to English.
Yes, I was going to ask about that.
Yeah, they lose their rhythm.
Yeah, cool, because when we were at the Dead Ant Comedy Festival... And we were so desperate to see the Indian comedy. We sat in the crowd to watch it.
I was the first person that did it. Was Adi Mitzi?
Yeah, Adi Mitzi. Yes.
She did it, and we were just because we were laughing along, enjoying it, and then she just split into a different language. We were like, "Huh? Yeah. I think, can I smell toast? I'm having a stroke."
Because watching like your rhythm on stage when you're doing the full thing in English, I'm like, I wonder how hard it is. For those tags to, because those were always the big laughs in the Adi Mitzi show that we saw. The setups there, the first punchline is English, and then the three tags is Hindi.
Yes. Yeah.
Have you ever done it by accident at the Fringe?
Yes, I have. And then I offer an immediate translation.
Okay.
Hopefully there are enough Indians that they laugh at it. Yeah. So there's always... So then when I translate it, they're like, all right, it's fine.
And then you can make a joke about that and show them behind the curtain.
Just be like, oh, no, that's what it means. And I did by accident. But
that helps you make the time for the show. You know, like you've got a 45-minute show, but 15 minutes of translations takes it to the hour.
Yes,
sorted.
That's been really helpful. Yeah. That's been my hack. Just to be like, I'm just going to spend extra time explaining this because I don't have 55. So I'm stretching it every night.
Excellent. That's how you do it though, isn't it? Like it eventually becomes an hour.
Yeah.
You start off beforehand going, I need some stuff here. And then you're just like, how about if I just slow down? What I sometimes do is put in an old joke and then feed that out over the first week. Just squeeze it out, make up time with something that I've already done before, and then just like as a placeholder until it's ready.
In the show I saw it with, I think it was on like the first 2 for 1 day, and you kept making jokes that it was your most Indian audience, and I didn't know whether that was true.
That was true.
Yes. So I was like, that's a funny joke, but am I laughing at it just because it's like my fucking white ignorance being like, well, it does make sense that they would be cheaper. That does. And then you were also like, and because this is the day with the most Indians in, they're going to be arriving late for the next 45 minutes. And sure enough, over the course of the next 45 minutes, just these Indian guys would walk and no apology on their face.
Yeah, like racist of you say it, but I know my people.
Yeah, they were like, yeah, so we're here. We paid in pounds. Deal with it. And I'm like, you're right. Yeah. You have paid to see me in pounds. Because there's an understanding that I'm paying foreign currency for you. And I could see you in rupees. So just...
Yeah. Okay, yeah. I'm coming to see you on the West End.
We discovered it in New Delhi when we had a curfew, like a really enforced curfew where the police are going to rush the stage if you're still on stage at 10 past 11. And just everybody was just turning up when they felt like it. It was like, well, this doesn't push back the show. This eats into the show.
Yeah, you must have had a lot of people come late, I'm sure. It was a huge auditorium, right?
Yes, yeah. So I think when we're going back to India next year, our plan is because I think we want to do 2 shows in a day so we can perform to as many people as possible. But like, we're giving them super... We're going to have to lie to them about the start time sort of thing. Yeah. Being like, the show starts at 5. It starts at 6. The show starts at 5. And if you're not there at 5, you don't get into the show because we know full well Indians will stop.
Are they already onto that?
Yes.
Will they know what we're doing?
They will probably then turn up by 5:30 and that'll be your middle ground. You still won't see enough people at 5 p.m.
Yeah.
They'll still be like, you know, we can miss the first half hour probably.
Yeah. I have something to... reveal. It was a plan of mine and it's not gone well so far. I think this is good company to bring up. So you speak Hindi?
Yes.
I, at the start of August, end of July, decided to try and set myself the challenge of, because I know we're going back to India next year, I thought it'd be really cool if I secretly learned Hindi.
Just a few of your tags.
Just to yes. sort of like, because to go out to a country that's been so welcoming and fun for us, to go out there and like, just at the end, not do comedy in Hindi, like in the way that like Eddie Izzard has done in French.
Spanish. Or
that Des...
Des Bishop.
Des Bishop's an Irish comedian who Mandarin. Learned Mandarin and does... Yeah.
So he learned Gaelic, which he can speak to 16,000 people. So that's Gaelic. An island. So he's like, I learned a whole new language and I can only do stand-up to like a few more people. So now I'm going to learn a language where I can do it to a billion more people. Yeah. So it was actually his third language that he learned.
And he's done comedy in Mandarin on Chinese television. Like yeah. He made
a documentary out of it. He went and lived out there. And I don't mean like in a city centre. He went and lived, working in a restaurant in some village where nobody spoke a lick of English so that he could be immersive.
He had to force himself to learn
yeah.
the language.
And then done a stand-up show in Mandarin. Yeah.
Is he good? Is it good?
I've seen the English story about it and it was amazing.
Yeah, here's the problem. I've seen him do the English version of some of the stand-up. Now, obviously, when you've learned Mandarin and you're performing to a Chinese audience who are so amazed that you're doing this, you can obviously make fun of them. Yes. And when you're making fun of them in their language, they clearly don't care about you doing an impression of them
yes.
because you've put in so much effort.
Yes.
When he does it in English in Australia, it's just an Irish man doing a Chinese accent.
But it does help that he tells the story about when the Chinese people were making fun of his Chinese accent. So he was like saying the word for welcome in Mandarin and they were just doing it in Mandarin also like welcome.
Yeah.
Like and taking the piss out of his accent. But so it kinda seems to level it a little bit. But it still doesn't give him permission.
Not to a predominantly white Melbourne audience. Where he's like, so then this Chinese guy up to me was like, oh, hello! And I'm like, man, buddy, Like, you can do that fully in the realm of China. Outside of this, not...
It's so funny, though. I love when a comic gets up on stage and just misreads the room. And then, of course, the audience is so tense. But you enjoy it so much.
Yeah.
Personally, you're like, do more of the Chinese accent.
I'm feeling something. This is making me feel alive.
It's so funny.
I've stopped getting emotions at these things. But this is something. I want to identify it.
Like, I enjoy this so deeply.
So I did the standard thing, right? I downloaded Duolingo first, and then I booked myself into to get a Hindi tutor. So for a week,
tutor.
How did I say it?
No, you said tutor.
And what? How is it pronounced?
Tutor.
Chu.
Chu.
Tutor.
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 Is it?
Tutor.
Tutor. With a U. Tutor.
TYU.
Tutor.
Tutor. This is because we've said the word too many times now. It's lost all meaning. This is an aneurysm for people. Yeah, uh-huh. The Hindi alphabet is fucked.
Why do you think that?
So there are 48 letters.
Yes.
And at least 10 of these letters make what I see as the exact same fucking sound yes. as four others. Like, man, there's ra, ra, ra,
yes.
ra. Those are four different layers,
yep.
right?
There's yeah, just like, ne, boil that down to one.
Ne, because it's where it ends. So some of it ends in the throat, some of it ends in the nose. So you go, so like, me, nam, Daniel, who?
Very
the
nice.
Who's got to end up in your who there.
Yeah.
Yeah?
That's very nice.
Thank you. Daniel Vad.
No way. No way. No way are you two going to break up in Hindi now. And just I'll go cross-eyed again.
So there's just, so could be, but I mean, I think it's a very beautiful alphabet because it does make sense. Because you've basically got 10 base sounds and then every bit of the letter, there's a little accent somewhere that changes. It changes my to mo or to...
E to a. And have you run into sir and sure? You know, there's yes. two S's also.
Yeah, with the, yeah. the thing on the top and the there's the sure in the bottom and A to A to A to...
Actually, at this point, I feel like he knows more about the Hindi alphabet than I do.
So
I,
have you taken the words like S-H, T-H, C-H and made it its own letter?
Yes.
Yes.
That's
yeah.
right.
Yeah. And it's such a fast language. So, man, I'm doing 4 hours a day at Hindi at one point, wow. just the alphabet. Because Duolingo's a good just dopamine loop, right? You got that one right. You got that one right. You got that one right. Ding, ding, ding. I'm learning the alphabet. I get to like 95% of the alphabet learned where I'm like, I could recognize the letters and I'm getting most of them right. I go into my first Hindi lesson with my instructor and she's like, do not learn the fucking alphabet. What are you doing? Like, the two big languages in India
Even
are,
Indian people don't learn the alphabet.
Well, she was just like, practically, you're going to go over there. The two big languages in India, the two official languages of India are Hindi and English. And,
yes.
And all the signs are going to be in Hindi and then English. So why are you fucking learning the Hindi? Because it'll be there. Surely you want to just do conversation.
For a bit. Do you not understand comedy? It's going to be worth it for like 15 seconds.
Yes. No, but I get her point. Like being able to read it wouldn't give me any advantage. Learning the pronunciations and the ha, ho, eh, and in the nose and the throat. The other thing that she was like, I don't think you'll be able to learn it to be conversational in the time that you've got. I think I'll be able to teach you enough that you're able to, you know, introduce yourself, say things. Understanding will be very hard because it's a fast language. And then I was like, okay, just teach me thank you. She was like, Indians don't say thank you.
Oh, yeah.
She was like, there are three ways to say thank you and you will never hear them under any circumstance while you're out there.
Really?
Yes.
But you're such a gracious people. Like, so the politeness seems to be like the hospitality thing. Like it seems to be the cornerstone.
No.
Is how.
Right, here's one of the ones I'm going to get this wrong, but here's one of the important ones I learned. And please excuse my tip.
Let me just say... Okay, at the end of, like, okay.
Yes.
Yeah, okay, like.
And please is, instead of like, give me that thing, please, cool. Give me that thing, okay?
Yes.
And like the okay is just them being, that's the version of please. Give me that, okay? That's mine, okay?
Okay, yeah.
That's there. That's there's so no funny. Please, it's just give me that, okay?
That's really jarring, yeah. But I think I could jump into them skipping ropes. Yeah,
is
that all right?
Sharminda Mat Kijiye.
Oh, yeah, Sharminda Mat Kijiye. Oh, very nice.
Which is, don't embarrass me by saying thank you. Which is like if you were to assist someone and were to say thank you is so out of place that the thing you automatically say is yes. like, why are you fucking saying thank you? Now you're embarrassing me. You think I'm not grateful for your fucking thanks?
So it should be implied.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you know what? I don't like that. I like the, because I one of my friends' kids didn't have their P's and Q's, and I was like, and they didn't even get corrected, and I was like, I feel like it's important for your manners, because like that's a base level of society, is that you've got good manners, because you want them to notice when you take them away. If yes. I take away a please and thank you, you fucking know that I've got an issue. So I just need everybody to know that my base level's polite, and that can go.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
I think it's important to put them in,
no,
so that you can take them out.
I feel like everyone's just really awkward to say thank you. You know how I feel like people here make conversation really easily with strangers, and you know, you have polite chit chat. So the reason I think people don't say thank you in India is because they're like, talking to a stranger already is like, it's too much.
Okay.
So it's like, if I say thank you, I don't want you to think that now we're friends or like, no, we're not friends, you know? Yeah. And I've said thank you sometimes. And I say thank you a lot because I just do. And I'm just...
Anglicized.
Yeah. Yes, I'm anglicized. That's correct.
Yeah. So, and crippling anxiety that we all go through. Well, you've just got
people
to be...
pleasing.
Yes, yes, yes.
And I'll take a rickshaw ride and I'll get down and I'll give the rickshaw guy my change and I'll be like, thank you. And he's just like... what's wrong with you? He looks confused. He's like, what are you trying to do here? Why are you doing this? Just get out.
That is so funny. She's, you know, annoyed. All your fans in India that got photos with you, when you went, thank you, have a good night, they were like, oh my God, we're BFFs. Exactly.
Yes.
That's only what you do with family.
She taught me three different versions of like sort of acceptable versions of thank you, and was explaining like when you would use this, like maybe to like the older people, if you were to like help them or if they did something for you, it's important to respect your elders there. And I'm like, if I say please and thank you too much in India? Is that when they'll work out that I'm a foreigner? And she went,
they know.
She's like, they're going to work out pretty quickly, buddy. Like,
a little bit before that.
Like in Bangalore, we're queuing for the palace, and it was like a price in rupees, and then foreigners, and then the white boy tax.
White boy tax.
Oh my God, that's amazing.
And we were like, we can't say we're from Mumbai.
Yeah.
we cannot get away with not being foreigners.
You couldn't pull it off.
No. I also think it's a very fair thing to do, yeah. Especially in places like India where you're like, there's a white boy tax, because at no point.
Getting your money back. Yeah. One tourist at a time.
Yeah, there is, for foreigners, there is a different price point. Yeah.
Last time you came here, we didn't charge you in, and look what happened. We have cricket and racism.
This is
now.
From Grandad. It's your pay entry price. There's my entry price. This is Grandad giving his money back.
I'm still going to try and stick with, like, I would like to be able to, at least to, like, our promoters and the staff out there, be able to, like, sort of say thank you, ask for a water, because I think it's a really nice thing to be able to talk to someone in their language and stuff. But
I also think it's a huge advantage because Hindi comedy is really taking off. So it would be like learning Mandarin and performing to 1 billion people.
Yeah, yeah. I think, look, white people are going to die soon.
Oh,
like, I think so.
Our time's up, man. Our time's up. The rest of the world
racist.
Are unionizing.
Is that racist? I think I did.
No, you
are the majority.
Yeah, I think
it is. I feel strange now.
you could be racist to white people on this podcast because we've said much worse things.
Yeah.
And also, I think we deserve it. But, like, don't get me wrong.
We just had a conversation in the house about when we start the new setup and we've got the new studio. We're going to have the casual racism box and legitimately put a fiver in when we're accidentally, for the sake of comedy, because ironic racism is just as bad as earnest racism.
Yeah.
Put it in. Like, give it to a charity at the end.
Sexism with your tongue in your cheek. It's still just sexism that you're putting out into the world.
But women's charity.
I think it's fine. Also, I mean, of course... I mean, what is casual racism that happens on the podcast? I just want to know, because I feel
just the laziest version of, like, his wife is, her mother is from Oman and her father is from Glasgow. So Natalie is Glaswegian. She just has slightly darker skin, but less.
But he blames her for 9/11.
Yeah. yeah, you know.
Well, it is kind of our fault.
Just that lazy, low-hanging fruit that, like, even as a comedian, you don't want to say it, but you've got that thing of, like, that joke's there, and I'm just so used to going for every joke that if I don't do it, someone else might do it. And even though I don't want the laugh, I don't want them to get a laugh instead of me.
I get it.
Yeah, it's really...
Fair enough. All my friends, they make fun of me for being a Muslim, because most of my friends are Hindus in India. And it's hilarious when they rib me and call me a terrorist or tell me that they're going to throw me out of the country soon. And honestly, it makes me laugh every time. I feel loved.
Well, I was so blown away by the in your show, because you were making fun of Muslims as well as the Hindus. But, like, making fun of Muslims in the UK because they are a persecuted sort of religion here and they receive all the racism. People are, especially liberal left-wing comedians, Islam is untouchable. Like, nobody would even dare make an insult. And then you were like, hey! And I'm like, well, this is refreshing.
Preach, sister.
No, I wasn't like, yeah, get him, finally.
You had your lighter out and a flag.
You know, I started feeling it at the spots. So the reason I make fun of Islam and Muslims is because right now you really can't make fun of any religion but your own, and especially Hinduism in India right now, because they're on the rise in the right wing and stuff. So it's just safer to make fun of my own religion. And I felt it in some of the lineup spots I was doing, where I was like, these guys are laughing way too hard at these Muslim jokes. And I was like, I feel like I'm relieving some tension here. And then when you're flyering them, a lot of older Scottish people were like, you were great. And I was like, come to my show, but like a little suspiciously.
Yeah, your solo show is just full of neck tattoos.
Yeah.
But also I was like, what the fuck? I'm doing this. Yeah. And I didn't change my set at all. I was like, come, it's fine. Give me your money. You hate Islam, I hate Islam. Come on, let's do this.
Well, because I find, and I don't know how much you can talk about this and we can edit out if need be, But I think the thing that would be shocking to people over here is the ignorance of, if you were to ask anyone in the street what the religion Hinduism is, yeah, they would tell you that it was very peaceful religion, mm-hmm, and
I would probably associate a lot of stuff with Buddhism, Hinduism, just because I would fill in my ignorance with like something else I don't understand.
And then we go over to India, where, as you say, right-wing populism is on the rise, and that's Hindi. And of course, all religions are, there's no one perfect religion anywhere. There's violence and goodness on both sides. I think that's the bit that's a fucking culture shock, to find out that like Hindis and the Muslims have this rivalry, but there's a part of the world where, you know, the Hindis are
being really shit to the Muslims. Is that fair to say? Like, I want to get you in too much trouble, but like, hate crimes, sometimes.
Yeah, no, I think I know what you're saying, and I found a loophole. I can talk about the government because you can't touch religion as a topic unless it's your own. So I found the loophole is to talk about the government, and it is the government, and they are, I mean, like you said, like, there's no religion that's actually good or bad.
Mm-hmm. It's how people use it.
It's how people use it. And I mean,
except for Scientologists. Across the board, all cunts, bar none.
Yes. What is it?
As well, the only one that's correct as well.
I have no reference points for Scientologists. I will come back to my topic. But it's a pyramid scheme, right? They?
So, Scientology, my theory is, this is my conspiracy theory. L. Ron Hubbard was a sci-fi writer. He wrote sci-fi books, and he wasn't very good at it. So what he did was, he was like, who's really gullible and like stories about wizards and magic and whatnot, religion? And I think he grew up, if not atheist, at least agnostic. I think he was trying to prove how silly religion is and how susceptible people are.
By writing his own as a work of fiction.
So he came up,
religions probably are.
Yeah. So he came up with the most ludicrous fucking, there's a planet several billion light years away where God was born, and all of his children come down in spaceships from us, but they died here, and they crashed into volcanoes, and their souls
children of time.
And they inhabit our bodies. And they're called thetans, and you get tested to find out how much of these thetans are. He just came up with something so ridiculous, so he could build this thing, and then he died before he went, way! And now we're just left with Tom Cruise.
Going, like, there's some money in this, and I like money.
Yeah.
And then you not get, like, you pay for entry level, and then you pay for the next level up. Yeah. Like, you get more information the more you subscribe.
But, man, I think Doug Stanhope has a bit, it might not be Stanhope, feel free to correct me, where he's like, I cannot respect Scientology because, like, there's videos of your Jesus. There's footage of
him in color.
Yeah.
His name is Ron. it's not a name you want to follow into an afterlife.
My God's called Derek.
Yeah. He's like, you cannot support a religion where there is footage of your God stubbing his toe.
Colin.
Yeah.
Colin excusing himself to go to the bathroom. That's my God.
So sorry, back to Hindi Muslim.
Yes, no, it's so strange. Actually, all religion is as ridiculous as this, but at least it's dated, right? There's no videos. It's so old. Mm-hmm. But the government right now in India is, going back to that, is actually, I think this is a concept that's been introduced by the Britishers. You're both Scottish, right? So that wouldn't... Well, yes, okay.
Nelly.
We consider him.
Nelly.
Okay. He comes from a place in
just
England.
South of the border.
It's called Newcastle, and it's just across the border in England.
Not even as far as Newcastle, Northumberland.
Yeah.
Oh.
But it's the next county down from the border.
Okay.
He's only English, and Scottish people only consider Geordies to be English whenever, like, England are playing football, because that's when they're English. Because of...
I still get the football team.
Yeah. You're allowed some joy in your life. When Margaret Thatcher was Prime Minister and she fucked over Scotland, she also really, really fucked up where he grew up.
A lot of the mining industry, like the coal mines, were in the northeast, and they kind of got closed down, so everybody got made redundant, and like the protested against it and shit. But there was nothing put in place instead of the mines. Oh. So it just went into austerity and the railway lines got ripped out and it was fucking... We just got left to rot.
She took free milk away from school children, which was like the big thing in the 80s. Her nickname was Margaret
she
Thatcher
took my milk. She took my bloody milk.
So,
I can't even look at milk. I can't even look at milk.
Triggering.
Triggered by milk.
The Geordies hate the rest of England with a similar sort of passion that the Scots, not outright hate, but just like we have very politically different thinking because of our history.
Oh, yeah. That makes sense. I love seeing the infighting. And yeah. I mean, that's how I look at it, right? Like, if you were to see India, you'd see, like, why are they fighting each other? Right?
Yeah, it's actually a lot of the North, where I'm from now, have got short memories, and they'll vote for the party that put them in this fucked up situation because they just don't read history.
Yeah.
Just lack of awareness is the key to the success of the government that's in power in India right now as well.
Triggering people, making them think that somebody else is the problem.
And absolutely,
it's the people on benefits, it's the refugees, it's these people, it's not us. It's not us lining each other's pockets, by the way. It's those guys underneath you.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of that, and there's a lot of downward hatred from people that are really near the bottom.
Oh yeah, that's just the best part is establishing an enemy that's not in the group, it's like outside the group. And for our government, they found it to be the Muslim minority, and I think in general their whole thing is that Hindus are a majority, but the government has had propaganda I think equivalent to as good as the Nazis, I would say. It's pretty good. It's like, I think because we're a global economy and they're dependent on a lot of other
propaganda
countries. Yes.
Is there an Indian version of like Fox News out there?
They're all Fox News.
Oh, really?
They bought all the media. We've had comedians go to jail. You can't really joke about a bajillion topics. You'll get into trouble, and not cancel culture trouble, which we think is very cute. You go to jail.
We were laughing about that.
We would love to be cancelled.
Yeah, just cancelled. What a privilege it would be to just get free publicity as opposed to, we know where your mother shops.
Yeah, and they do that. They dox you. So they like release your address. They will put out your parents' numbers. They'll make WhatsApp groups. They'll keep adding your family to it.
There's a lot of Indian parents out there. The way pride works in Indian culture is if your child gets doxed, at one point you're like, I did get 1,000 death threats today. God, my daughter's doing very well.
Everybody has my number.
Yeah. My friend down the street, her son's been doing comedy for 7 years. She got 7 death threats yesterday.
My phone just won't stop ringing.
So how long ago did you start comedy, and where about in India did you start?
In Mumbai. I started in Mumbai. And I started in 2016. Okay. So yeah, I think it's been 7-8 years now. That's when I started. The Indian scene is, I think it started around 2010, 2011. So the comedy scene is.
And is it a fun scene to start on?
It's pretty great. I mean, we have scenes in Mumbai, Delhi, Chennai, Bangalore, like the four.
Is it mostly English speaking?
No, it's actually mostly Hindi speaking, because up north is where most of the population is. I don't know why it's boring to give stats.
Love this, and they will listen to whatever we want them to fucking listen to.
All right, great. That's done then. Okay, so 50% of the Indian population lives in 10% of the landmass, which is up north.
Okay.
And the other 50% is distributed in 90% of the country. So up north, everybody speaks Hindi. And down in the bottom, in the 90%, we're not culturally homogeneous.
Okay.
So there's English, there's Marathi, there's Tamil, there's Chennai. And cultural reference points also change. So Hindi comedy is really dominant. And they're excellent. They're really good. Mm-hmm. And English comedy, also equally, enough people in India that you can make a career no matter what language you speak in. It's pretty viable. It's mostly Hindi right now. And people find us through YouTube and stuff.
So all of the diversity in the countries in the south, or is there still diversity in the north, but just condensed?
There is a lot of diversity because there are a lot of different states. But the thing is, they're very homogeneous culturally, right? They'll have very few variations.
Mm-hmm.
But down in the south, they have, there's a lot of diversity. There's a lot of different languages. Yeah. And there's a lot of, every state has just different practices and traditions and stuff. And just generally, it's really nice because there's so much diversity that everybody has a new reference point for hating another person.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
But I find it so fucking interesting speaking to the Indian comics that we met out there, which is like, you know, if you start in the north and you do your comedy in English with a mix of Hindi up there, I'm like, how do you do in the south of India? And they're like, I don't play the south of India because it's a different language. I think some of it's a different alphabet as well.
Yes, all of it is.
Yeah. And there's like the, you know how there's the Bible Belt in America. They were saying that in India there's the cow belt.
Yes.
Cow belt.
The cow belt, yeah.
Oh, well, everyone loves the cows a lot.
Yes, yes. And
oh, yes, proper love cows, don't you?
Yes. We love cows. One of the, I think this was a tweet, but the tweet was, you know, like how cows have more rights than Muslims in India right now. And it's just like, you know, like cows.
Because we'll eat a steak. If we were in the cow belt and we ate a steak, would that be like seen as like cannibalism?
Actually, you wouldn't find a steak to eat.
No,
They don't sell cow meat at all. Beef is banned in India.
It's banned. So also legally, but morally, will they just see you as absolutely reprehensible, like you're a paedophile or a murderer?
They would lynch you.
Really?
We have lynchings. So a lot of times when they lynch Muslims, it's on the suspicion that they had beef in their house.
Oh boy. We cannot go there.
Yeah, we can.
You know, like imagine people in like, let's just say Mexico. Oh,
great, let's see where let's see what vein of racism this ends up in.
We're like, just casually having sex with 10-year-olds.
Oh, right? Like,
yeah. We hadn't said Mexico.
I wish you hadn't said Mexico. I wish you'd said France.
Mate, this is where we'd put £5 in the box and donate it to the taco shop. All right, a tenner. All right, a tenner.
Right. I'll have a burrito, please.
And then they just came on holiday here. And yes, they didn't fuck our 10-year-olds, but we knew there'd been fucking 10-year-olds at home. I'd still want to lynch them.
Yeah.
So if we go to there,
don't let them have this. If this is incorrect,
they can't just go, oh well, that's just what they do in their country. If they really, really think that it's that level of reprehensible, then they've got every right to. We can't go there.
Americans come over here and they shoot up schools, man. We don't have this.
Not them. Like if the school shooter came over here, I'd be mad at him.
They're all one Fox News clip away from being a fucking shooter, man.
That's true. In this Fox News in India, the Murdoch media. Still.
So, yeah, you know how you were saying it's all the news over there is Fox? It's not owned by Murdoch.
Is it not?
I don't think so, because Murdoch owns the news.
You know who Rupert Murdoch is?
Sorry, no, I don't.
Have you seen the show Succession?
No.
Oh, okay.
Well, recommend, highly recommend. Okay. But that is based on a real-life family who run Sky News over here, Fox News in America.
And I don't know if it's Fox in Australia.
I think it's actually Sky in Australia, but it's more the tone of Fox.
Yeah. So he's the one that, him and his family, he's the one that builds the write-up in countries because it gives them the Tucker Carlsons,
He can like make it so that whoever he wants to win the election wins the election.
He's the reason Brexit happened because he decided that he didn't have any power in Europe, so he was going to turn the British public against the idea of the European Union, and he spent 4 years making sure that the media in the UK did that, and that was enough to
Whoever he's in bed with, that's who wins.
He's the reason why Trump became president the first time as well. Like, this is what he does.
And he's been around for a long time.
Yeah. Australia had a right-wing government for fucking 12 years, despite actually populationally wise being quite a liberal place, just because he knows that 30% of any population at least just won't vote in elections. And he knows it's much easier to inspire hate than it is sort of love for change and everything. So our question there was,
Is it him?
It's not him in India. They're just using the tactics of him.
Yes, I think so. I'm not sure if it's him or not now that you've said it, because I feel like if you can trace everything back to a richer person, it could be him, you know, just the dead layers of other
people
in between.
Or it's probably one of his golf buddies.
Yeah,
they work on this shit together. If you want to have global domination, you're in bed together, right?
So just to go back and try and save the cow conversation. So cows are holy, and that's why they're not eaten.
Yes. And that's, I feel fine, of course. You know, like that's their belief and everything. I have to say that, but this is going to be on the internet. But it's completely fine.
It's behind a £3 paywall.
Yeah.
It's not.
It's okay to police what people are eating. I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
But it's just the lynching, which is the problem, which is that, you know, when you lynch people on the suspicion that they're eating cow.
They've eaten meat, being like, that fucking cunt's breath smells like steak, man. I'm just telling you, I think he's...
Where does the cow love come from?
I think cow is a goddess. She's a mother. The cow is a mother. They consider her a mother. And it's because every part of the cow is useful. Uh-huh. You know, you get something from it. And so they worship cows. And so they don't want to eat cows.
Do you take the milk?
Yes, they did.
Yeah. Did Margaret Thatcher not have anything to say about that? No? Did Margaret Thatcher come to India and take away all the cow's milk? Milk of the gods? So
the other thing is, when we were in, I think it was Delhi and Bengaluru, we noticed it the most. There were lots of stray dogs who were not underfed even a single bit. Like, clearly just dogs that, like, didn't have a place home.
Fat dogs and starved people.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then, so the dog's just protected in India?
Or
does that come from the Hindu religion of, you know, we're all animals are one, let's look after each other sort of?
I mean, I am not quite sure about that, to be honest. But I think it's everybody just really likes animals because they generally hate each other. So I think we direct all of our love towards the dogs.
Yeah, good.
If you want to ask us any ignorant white questions, we can explain to you why we like mayonnaise if you just want to balance this podcast out.
So I think in general everybody just really loves the dogs and the cats and everything, so they feed them. But there's also a lot of ignorance around animals. They are mistreated, they are brutalized, but we have a lot of NGOs and which are the non-funded organizations and charity organizations that take care of them. But I'm really, it's really heartening to see that dogs are generally loved.
Love it.
I had asked questions about that because I do a bit about having a pet dog, and I had to genuinely ask the audience because I didn't know. I was like, do you have pet dogs or do you just have dogs that are around? Both. The answer was both.
My cat is actually an indoor-outdoor cat.
Yeah.
So she was in the building that I live in, but now she just comes in, she has a litter, she has food, and she comes and goes as she pleases. Yeah. So most of us have
that's
a lot
often
of
the same here too.
So. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, everyone has pets that go in and out, but also home pets. Yeah, just general. Yeah.
Yeah, because you don't want to go too ignorant. You know, have you heard of ketchup here? But also, you need to know what, before you start talking, you need to know a little bit about the place.
I would fucking love you to walk on stage anywhere in India and say, do you have ketchup here?
Like, have you heard of ketchup?
In a country of sauces, in a country of the most flavorful, wonderful sauces, they're like, yeah, we have it. But why?
There's another option. Who was shocked at how much we love a sandwich? There was someone Indian that was just like, he just loves sandwiches.
Yeah, you guys really love sandwiches. There's so much bread in your food. It's have some fiber. I need to shit. It's all clogged up.
That was when we were in India. Everybody invited us to their mothers for food.
Yeah.
Like, we could have went to a million different houses for the mother's food. Like, if you were over here, I would never be like, do you want to come to me, ma'am? She'll make you a sandwich. Primula cheese spread.
Yeah. Do you want a worse version of tea?
I wait for thin ham.
How have you been finding the Scottish food over here?
Okay, it's not very flavorful. So I'm having trouble.
But it's deep fried.
Yes.
So it's that's how we
don't use fat and everything.
We don't like the crunch of lettuce because those are leaves.
Still like the crunch.
But we like the crunch of.
So put crisps in your sandwich.
Just make it. I had that Mars bar, the deep fried.
Oh, yeah.
Mars
bar. One of them?
Yes, and it tasted like fish because it was from a fish and chips shop.
Yeah.
I loved it. I was like, this is amazing.
Fishy chocolate.
I've got a theory, it's not a fact. That is just a tourist trap, and not a Scottish person has ate a single one of those. Nobody in Scotland has one of them recreationally, but they tell everybody it's a Scottish thing that you do. So it's more like tourists eat them.
Then I have a follow-up question.
Yeah.
Is iron brew a real thing?
That's legit.
Okay, fine. Okay.
That's legit.
Okay, not haggis, the trap I fell for.
Haggis is legit.
Haggis is legit.
Whiskey, of course.
Yeah, whiskey's legit. Iron brew is the nectar of the gods. There's lots of debates in Scotland about
you guys have milk.
She left you with a lot of iron brew.
Yeah, but you just put rust through a soda stream.
Yeah.
Iron brew.
About 4 or 5 years ago, because of the sugar laws that were coming into place, they had to legally change the recipe of iron brew, which was beyond controversial here. Like, the closest, more controversy about fucking Brexit and Scottish independence. People were mass buying this stuff before they changed the fucking recipe and burying it in their back garden so that in like 20 years we can dig it up and give to our skinny children and be like, we used to have joy.
Did you not find a place that sold it in New York?
Yeah, and yes, but in New York.
The original recipe Iron Brew?
They will never sell the original recipe Iron Brew in America because there's a secret ingredient in Iron Brew.
Mexico.
Is this not true? Have I made this up? Oh, balls.
I still want to know what was the thing you were making up.
The thing that I'd always heard was because there's a secret recipe in Iron Brew and only like three members of the brew family knew what it was. And when they started importing it to America, America was like, tell us the secret ingredient. And they were like, it's girders. Like, because that used to be like the joke in the advert. It was made from steel iron girders. Oh. That's why it's called Iron Brew. And obviously America was like, ha ha ha, what's the fucking ingredient? And they were like, we're not telling you. So there's now a less good version of it in the States.
They put in three of the four nuke codes. What is an Iron Brew?
Iron Brew should always be drank at room temperature. It's like a... people will put ice in it, but...
No, get out of here. It's a refreshing soft drink. Don't make it something it's not. You're not a sommelier.
How dare you? It's like a fine red wine, and to get the flavours of it properly...
Luckily, in Scotland, room temperature is cold.
Yes. But you're both Iron Brew purists.
I'm from the other side of the border.
Okay.
I am an Iron Brew purist. Yeah. There was back in the 90s, there was a sweet called an Iron Brew bar, and it was just tasted exactly like Iron Brew. And then for some reason, they just stopped fucking making it. So when I got like a tiny little bit of fame, I approached the company, because they were like, do you want to work with us? And I'm like, I will work with you if you bring back Iron Brew bars. Like, please do. And they were like, we don't have the recipe for it anymore. And I'm like, but you've got the recipe for Iron Brew, motherfuckers. So just...
But if you've got one bar left, I'll taste it and tell you.
Yeah. And they just... For years, I've been trying to get them to bring... Because it wasn't made by them. It was made by some little confectionery company in the borders that had the recipe for it. And then I think that either shut down or burned down or went into fucking, you know, company remission or whatever and just sort of died. And they lost the recipe. And the only version of Iron Brew bars now you can get are like Oor Willie, which is like a shitty Scottish comic book from like the 70s, 80s. They do a version of it, which is okay.
Is there still little statues of Oor Willie dotted around the city?
Yeah.
You might have seen those.
Oh.
It's these little cartoonish, like, kind of sculptors.
Yeah. Sculptures. It was just a really weird cartoon back in the days of, like, Dennis the Menace.
I know Dennis.
Yeah.
Like that ilk.
That same fucking vein.
And now you miss the Iron Brew bar. But they didn't bring it back. No, despite
all of your fame.
Despite your
fame. You didn't have the power.
No. power. It's devastating.
I even tried to get in. When I got the like level of fame of like supporting you on tour, I approached the Mars Bar Company and asked them to change Snickers back to Marathon. They wouldn't. Yeah. Like, not even at your level of fame, Kyle. We're not doing it.
He still can't even get milk back in Newcastle.
That has been long dead. Long dead.
Just a bunch of Geordies going, cow cum. I'm not drinking cow cum. It's not.
Oh, that's what it was. I stand corrected. I've been fighting all of my life for this.
When we were in India, because we were there for 4 days, and because we were so worried about getting Delhi belly, because my mum's been doing work in India for the past 2 years, where she has to go there for 3 months over the year to help reduce carbon emissions with like coal burning and everything. And
India's the end of level, boss.
Yeah. Trying to help India reduce, because everyone blames India for their carbon emissions.
Yes, of course.
But then also expects India to do all of the cheap labour and all of this, make everything for us, but do it in a more environmentally friendly way, which is an impossible thing to ask a developing nation to do.
Correct.
So she's trying her best to do that. And she loves Indian food so much, but she's never once managed to go there without getting a bit sick at some point. So because we were performing... For the first 3 days, I felt like the worst fucking tourist in the world.
We had to go to a French cafe for some pastries.
Yeah, we were like, let's get pizza, let's get pasta, let's do this. And then on the last day at the Dead Ant Comedy Festival, because we were flying out the next day, I'm like, just get us fucking everything you can. And it was unbelievable.
What did they get you?
I can't remember the names of them, but we got...
I had these recently, you know, at an Indian wedding.
The little... crispy balls
with a hole in the top.
With a hole in the
top.
Pani puri. Yes. That's it. Yes.
Yeah, that was amazing. The other day, and I felt so cultured.
Yeah.
It's like I've had these before.
Did you have them spicy or did you have them sweet or mix?
Mix. 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 It was both. But I think
spicy.
But it wasn't overwhelming spicy. It wasn't like
I like spice, and we were getting a lot of, like, and I would tell the Indians that I like spice, and they were like, white boy, spice. We're not going to give you the real spice.
All right, call my boy.
Yeah. We had, I can't remember the name of it, but it was like some sort of fried yellow vegetable thing in between, like, just a standard bun, like a roll.
Yes.
That was also amazing.
Yeah, I was shocked that this was just a regular grocery store bun.
Yeah.
I did not expect that at all. I was like some traditional food from Sainsbury's.
It's a bun.
Yeah. And for a people that are just so good at making bread, like, I feel like if you were to give any Indian woman over the age of 50 flour, rice and salt, within 3 minutes, she would have this beautiful, like, roti or chapati or whatever, and it would be delicious.
Or she gets hit. So she knows how to make it.
Get it lame. See, the mother of all invention is violence. It is, you know. I discovered from watching...
You're very good at cooking, but not by choice.
Oh, no.
I don't even know.
Do you have a passion for cooking? I have a passion for living, so it has to go hand in hand.
You know, I have to make... I thought the ingredient was love. Yes, that's what we like to say. You know, I think the problem here is that I want to say my thing, but I'm also saying it to you're really nice, but white people. So it's like, it doesn't matter what I say now. If I say the actual thing, then it's like, why did you go there and say it?
We can edit it out if it's bad.
I'm going to say it. And then if I don't say it, it's like, oh, it's not that good. It's really bad here. So I don't.
What would you recommend as food next time we go over? Because I didn't have any Delhi Belly at all afterwards. Oh. And I've got that. After we had that meal, I've got that.
You've been it's a smallpox vaccine.
Yeah.
you've had a little bit. I've given a bit of time. Now I'm ready to feast.
Your body's used to it now. Yeah. Just expose yourself to it.
Yeah, one bit at a time. Yeah. Slowly build it up. Is there anything next time we're over, whether it's like a meal or whether it's a dessert, that we absolutely have to try?
Yes, there's so much. So if you go to Delhi, then you have to go to Old Delhi and you have to have Nihari.
Nihari?
Nihari, yes. I will actually send it to you on WhatsApp as well.
Yes,
so,
please.
But I'm going to, so Nihari in Old Delhi. Butter chicken is also really nice if you go to...
Chicken.
Yes, butter chicken. Very nice butter chicken. Dal makhani is another thing. Yes, this is all in Delhi. We're still in Delhi right now.
Dal in Sri Lanka. Oh, in Sri Lanka, and had a lot of dal.
What kind of dal do they have, though? I'm not sure. Is it?
No idea. That's a discovered dal. So I wasn't about to deep dive into it. Like, I was like, I've just learned this new thing.
It's good fiber in case you want to have it between your sandwiches.
Is it chickpeas?
It's chickpeas, yes. Yeah. There is actually so many different types of dal. It's just beans, you know. Yeah. So it's just like, not beans actually, sorry. It's just dal. I don't know what it's called in English. But there's so many different. So these three are up north. I'm missing stuff, of course, but for sure these three. In Bangalore, you should get dosa, which is that crispy. Did you have the white crispy thing?
No.
Oh my God, you didn't have idli dosa?
No.
Okay, yes, idli dosa, mendu vada. Yeah, and then you had this stuff in Maharashtra. You had, in Mumbai, you had Pani Puri and Vada Pav.
Yeah.
Every city you went to was actually in a different part of India. So there's different food that you could have.
Types
of diarrhea you could enjoy.
This one came out in Dropule, so this was pure liquid.
I didn't even, because I went a while ago in 2011 and the food didn't get me, but the water did. I put ice in my whiskey.
Did you have tap water?
Well, first of all, in that case, you fucking deserve diarrhea from a Scottish perspective.
Yeah.
Like, that's all on you.
But it's hotter than Scotland.
Aye. Did you have tap water?
Well, I had ice that was made with tap water.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Somebody's house.
Our tap water is not drinkable. So you have to, we have like filters.
So wait a minute. Is it not drinkable for tourists? Or is it not drinkable for anyone?
For anyone.
So what the fuck were people giving me that ice for then?
They were. Where did you have this? What establishment
was it? Was at a promoter's house.
All right. Yeah, then it was probably, maybe it was not drinkable for you. Maybe you made it with
Maybe it wasn't just that. It might have been just brushing my teeth or something.
I understand. I mean, your body is used to a different level of filtration, and that's a very fair.
Deep fried shit. The stuff with no liquid. We're just putting crispy oil into our stomachs.
Murder the bacteria.
Yeah. Boil it to fucking death. So we didn't have any Indian desserts out there, which I'm very aware is mad. But like when we go to
the restaurants,
when we go to Japan or Singapore, we don't have any of their desserts because they don't do it great. It's all like fucking green tea flavored stuff and
matcha.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And also all of the desserts are like, hey, you enjoyed your start and your main course. How about a milky rice ball? And you're like,
Chinese restaurants put everything into the first two courses.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like nothing. That's such an afterthought, the dessert menu.
Whereas I feel like with Indian desserts, from what I've seen, it's just the sugariest, sweetest. Yeah.
So much sugar. Baklava?
Is that Indian?
No, baklava? That's Turkish.
Is that Turkish?
Which is that?
Baklava. Wrong continent.
Yeah. And
it's
the
Arab. Yeah. It's Arabic.
And is what part of India is the Turkish delight from? Is that south or is that
White Russian? That's an Indian drink, right?
Is gelato from here? Is it Scottish? Is it Scottish?
Pizza, right? Pizza.
Pizza. You need to pizza. But you know, you got the palate right because it's full of sugar syrup.
Got it.
So even though you don't know the exact place, it is full of sugar syrup. It's really sugary, but it's so good. But you will feel a little sick, so you have to space it out.
Okay. That's the sign of a good dessert.
Yes.
Like, problem with British and American desserts is you can always be like, oh, I could have another bit of this, or it's a bit fucking Moorish. I like when sugary stuff is so fucking sickly that your body's like, if we were diabetic, we would be fucking dead. Like, it would be fully over. I feel like in India,
you can grab someone who's got an insulin watch and it starts beeping. Yeah. They should get through you.
Listen, a lot of Indians get diabetes because of this our diet. So yeah, yeah, it's not so. Do you guys have a lot of diabetes here?
Yeah, we do, but just, yeah.
Undiagnosed.
Yeah.
Just a lot of death.
Well, they have some of that.
Like, one of the things that you might have noticed up in one of the biggest differences between Scotland and England is our names for squash, you know, like cordial liquid that you add water to make it. So it's called cordial in America. It's called
diluted juice.
Squash in England, and it's called diluting juice in Scotland. Iron brew is juice in Scotland. We would call that juice. Nah. It's not a fizzy drink. It's juice.
Juice is cordial.
Coke is juice.
All fresh orange.
Fanta's juice. Tango's juice.
Pop.
All juice.
Pop.
Iron Brew is juice?
This is why we're all diabetic.
I call it pop.
If you want to know what the actual orange juice of Scotland is, it's Iron Brew. Because it's an orange juice. Orange juice is some sort of fruity cocktail.
Yeah. I kind of believe it when you say, like, do you want some juice and then pour a Coca-Cola?
Yeah.
Like, that's not
if it. What did you juice
to get that then?
We squeezed an American. Just. So what desserts should we go for next time we're there?
I think you should definitely have jalebi. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Again, I will send you all these names. There's rasmalai. There's gulab jamun. Those three are really good.
These all just sound fun to say as well. Just order them for the sake of saying them.
You should also just go to a sweet shop. Sorry.
Yeah.
In my accent as well. Say it again.
Gulab jamun.
Gulab jamun.
Yes. Oh my God. I must say, if you guys go and place your orders at any Mithai shop, they will be really tickled to hear you guys say the names. Great. They would enjoy it.
Yeah. Oh, well, because I'd like to, I'm gonna stick with Hindi to be able to ask, like, not please may I have. I guess I'll be learning, give me that fuck okay. face. Give me that, okay?
We're not friends. We can exist in each other's company without sharing numbers.
They would respect you if you yell at them in Hindi. They'd be like, who's this? All right.
Yeah. That's from a white boy.
Give him good. Let's give him good customer service. Also, you should go into a mithai shop and just, you know what? It's like, just have fun. Just they're all in different shapes and they're all different colors.
Like macaroons.
Go in blind. Yes. Yeah.
Oh, they're the same shape, different colours.
Same shape, different colours. Just like people. That's just me denying the existence of fat people.
Put it in the fat jar. £5 in the fat jar. Give it to a charity.
It's going to be full of jars.
It made it broke. Yeah. Totally flat.
You should make the fat jar fat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. That'll be the one jar that's actually a piggy bank.
You should have the raised jar, different colours.
Yes, yeah.
Defeat the purpose of the jars.
And we'll put slightly less money in the sexism jar for women.
Yeah, like 80% more.
We'll be like, we insult black people there, so they get a fiver. And these dumb sluts get £3.
That's
Where can our podcast listeners follow you? Where can they find you? Are you doing any more of the UK after this?
Yes, I'm coming back here in October. I'm doing 3 shows at the Soho Theatre.
Great. Amazing.
I don't know the exact dates, but it's Diwali time. So it's around Diwali. And you can follow me on Instagram, Uruja Shwak, and my YouTube channel is also called the same thing. I put stand-up videos there with English subtitles.
Yeah. Yes. And now you'll know what it's like to be any of my foreign fans who are like, oh, I actually need these. Thanks so much for coming on, mate.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. That was class. I had a really nice time. Thank you.
Enjoy the rest of your Fringe Festival.
Yeah. Thank you. And congratulations on all your very, very well-earned success.
Thank you.
And we will see you in Mumbai.
Yes, please.
Yeah. Yes.
Awesome. I will take you to all the nice food places.
You can be our food tourist.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yes. Awesome.
Sweet.
Thank you.